Welcome to the ProPublica podcast. I'm Charlie Ornstein, and I'm a senior reporter here at ProPublica. Special education is a lifeline for children with disabilities, big or small. But it comes at a pretty steep cost. The federal government mandates that public schools in the United States provide specialized education services for all children with disabilities. But states spend billions of dollars a year doing so. In the great big state of Texas, things have happened outside of the public view, though, when it comes to special education. The Houston Chronicle recently reported that Texas arbitrarily decided what percentage of students should get special education services, setting that number at 8.5%, and has forced school districts to comply by auditing them and taking action against those that serve too many kids. This story is broken by Brian Rosenthal at the Houston Chronicle, who found that Texas now has the lowest rate of children receiving special education in the country, far below the national average of 13%. Brian is joining us on the podcast today. Brian, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So this is a huge story because I think many parents believe that the decision on whether or not their children receive special education is going to be based on, oh, well, their children. But in Texas, something more was at stake. Tell us what you found.
So we found that out of the public's view, as you said, without any public announcement or vote in the legislature or consultation with the federal government or state board of education, the Texas Education Agency came up with this target of 8.5%. And school districts have really responded to that by curtailing special education services. At the time of the target's implementation, about 12% of students were receiving some form of services. And I want to be clear, when we talk about services, I think people have kind of a misconception about special ed. I certainly did, that people think that they are in a separate place. Actually, in reality, today, most kids who are quote-unquote in special ed spend almost all the time in the general education classroom. They're just getting pulled out for therapy or tutoring, some special help, or they're receiving services in the general education classroom. And so when we talk about percentages, we're talking about anybody receiving any type of service. And it was at about 12% in Texas when this policy was put in place in 2004, which is close to the national average, which is and was, as you mentioned, about 13%. In the years since this target was put in place, the percentage receiving services here in Texas has declined dramatically to the point where last school year it actually hit 8.5% on the nose for the first time, which is the lowest that any state has had in decades.
So I think you made a really important point about what special is and what special ed isn't. So it is not just that students are taken out of the mainstream, and it can include things like speech services or occupational services. It can include having an aide in the classroom to help a student who needs a little extra help, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And that was a misconception that we learned along the way. When we talk about the tens of thousands of children who have been denied services, a lot of them are those children with relatively moderate or mild disabilities who might be receiving a couple sessions of speech therapy every week. And that support is critical to the development of these children. It doesn't actually cost the schools that much money. Of course, we also found children with much more severe disabilities that also have been denied. But yeah, it's across the board in terms of who has been kept out.
So I have so many questions, but one thing I think our listeners will be interested in is how you found out about this story.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it was from an advocate. We were looking, quite frankly, for a story to do this year because the Texas legislature only meets once every 2 years because we don't like our government very much down here. And so in off years, it's a real opportunity for journalists to dig into some issues. And we were looking for something to dig into, and an advocate actually presented this to me. And this particular advocate actually was confused about the fact that Texas had the lowest percentage of students receiving special ed services by far of any state in the country. And this advocate didn't actually even know about the 8.5%. He just thought that we should be looking into this mystery of why Texas serves so few children with disabilities. And we started looking into it, and in talking with other advocates and people working in schools, we found out about this unannounced 8.5% target.
And some people tried to say this was a sign of success, right? That Texas was succeeding in its mainstreaming of children and in providing other services that didn't rise to the level of special ed. But why is that not so?
Yeah, there are several reasons why that is not so. We took that explanation very seriously because if that explanation was right, it would mean that our story was 100% wrong. You know, not even kind of wrong, but 100% wrong, that this was not a bad thing, this was a good thing. So we really dived into that explanation, and we talked to, you know, more than 60 national education experts and interviewed more than 300 people overall. And what we found is that the idea that Texas doesn't have as much need for special ed because it has better instruction in general education is not true for several reasons. First of all, Texas is not doing anything different in terms of trying to reach struggling students as any other state in the country. In fact, the techniques that they say have brought down their special ed rates have been implemented even more aggressively in most other states in the country, and they have not led to any sort of a reduction in special ed in any other part of the country. The person that helped come up with the techniques said that these techniques have not been found to lower special ed rates. It's also noteworthy that the implementation of these techniques don't really line up with the decline. They were implemented actually after much of the decline happened. And also, if the techniques were being phenomenally successful, if Texas had figured out a new way to teach struggling students, you would think that student performance in Texas would actually increase as well. But it turns out that on metrics like the National Assessment of Educational Progress, Texas has actually been doing worse, which undermines the argument. And finally, even if this was the case that they had figured out a way to improve their instruction, that would only have reduced the numbers in the category of learning disability, which is a category that is filled with kids with issues such as dyslexia, where instruction can help. There are some disabilities that, quite frankly, a student has and they will continue to have and they will continue to need services for. And what was interesting to us was the decline in special ed services took place across the board. It wasn't just in this learning disabilities category. It was even in the number of children receiving services for being blind, for being deaf, for having orthopedic impairments, for having autism. Some of these really severe disabilities that could not be explained by any improved instruction.
So I think, you know, the obvious question is, where did these students go? So if they existed before, and one would presume they exist now, where are they getting educated?
Most of them, it appears, are in schools, in general education classrooms, and simply not receiving these services that they're entitled to. We've heard from some parents and advocates that a lot of these children have actually been pulled out of public schools when parents were unable to obtain services. They decided to homeschool their child or pay to put them in private school. So there are certainly cases like that, but it appears as if most of these children are just in regular schools and just not receiving the services that they should be.
But what is the consequence of that? So you know, some people may look at that. I've worked in Texas. You're in Texas. And, you know, some people say, well, then it works. This is the way it should be. And they're going to applaud this. But if they're still in school and they're in general ed classrooms but not receiving the services, like, how are they negatively impacted by this?
We talk to a lot of parents who are in the situation. And the children who have disabilities and have been denied services are failing classes. They are not succeeding to their potential in classes. A lot of them have become very frustrated with school. Some of them have dropped out. And we actually talked to a lot of parents who said that they have children who they have tried to get into special ed, have been unable to, despite having a diagnosed disability, and have had their children become so frustrated with school that they start having suicidal tendencies. There were several parents that we talked to where the child actually attempted suicide, and the parent felt that that was related to the child not receiving help that they needed and beginning to fail in school. So we heard a lot of anecdotes about that type of thing, in terms of tracking where they are, nobody is tracking where these kids are. So it's hard to know exactly what has happened to them. But I guess that's our indication from the work that we've done.
How did nobody know about this, though? I mean, as you noted, there's, you know, a disability rights advocate was concerned about this, and your story notes that a few people sporadically had filed complaints. But how did such a massive change in who is receiving special ed essentially go unnoticed for a decade?
It's a great question. And when I told my editor about the story, I told him, you know, this is a shocking story, but the most surprising thing about it is that it's never been written before, because you would think that this is something that would definitely have been noticed. And it certainly has been noticed that there has been a reduction in children receiving special ed. Nobody knew the reason for that. And I think the reason why it has not gotten more attention is that in talking with people in schools who are well, obviously told about this and have changed their practices in response to this 8.5% policy, they felt, and many of them said that they were told by the TEA, the Texas Education Agency, that this was a policy that was mandated by the federal government, or at the very least backed by research. And turns out neither of those things are true. But I think school officials, because they thought that it was backed by research or mandated by the federal government, they kind of accepted it as reality. They didn't realize that it was arbitrary and originated from the TEA itself.
So one of my favorite parts of the story is you talked to a woman named Kathy Clayton, who was one of the four officials at the TEA who helped set this benchmark, and she was the only one who agreed to speak to you. And I love this passage where you say that she told you that the choice of 8.5%, that it was based on the average for statewide average special education enrollment, and then you were reminded that the statewide average was nearly 12% at the time she paused. Well, it was set at a little bit of a reach, she said. Anytime you set a goal, you want to make it a bit of a reach because you're trying to move the number. And to me, the explanations you got, you know, sometimes it was called a benchmark, sometimes it was called an indicator. There was a lot of dancing going around here. Is that the sense you got too?
Yeah, the Texas Education Agency certainly objects to it being called a target or a cap. They say it's just a goal, basically an indicator of performance. But in talking with people in schools, and we heard this, we interviewed, you know, more than 100 people working in schools, and they said over and over again that they perceive this policy, whether that's how it was intended or not, as a hard cap on the number of students that they could serve. They felt that they could only help 8.5% of their children. So that's how it actually played out in schools.
And indeed, if a school district went over 8.5%, they were asked to submit a corrective action plan, right?
Correct. And that corrective action plan laid out how the school planned to go about reducing those numbers. Much of the facts in our story about how schools have reduced their special ed enrollments is just pulled out of those corrective action plans, you know, looking at literally what the district said they were going to do to reduce those numbers.
So let's talk about urban areas for some comparison here, because I think what was striking about some of the statistics that you gathered was that when you look at other prominent urban areas like Los Angeles or New York, the rates were considerably higher. And the only districts where the rates were as low as 8.5% or even below 10% were districts in Texas. So help me understand that and why that's so striking.
Yeah, so it turns out that urban areas actually tend to have higher rates of children receiving special education services because there are more risk factors for having disabilities in urban areas. There's more poverty, which is a risk factor. There's more premature births, low-weight births. Those things tend to happen more often in urban areas. And as such, there are more people with disabilities in urban areas. Some people with disabilities sometimes move to urban areas to access better services. And so the rates are higher in urban areas, and you see that across the country. In New York City, for example, even though, as we said, the national average is 13%, in New York City, 19% of students receive special ed services. And in Milwaukee, it's 20%. And in Detroit, it's 18%. It's very high in these urban areas. But it turns out in Texas, strangely, urban areas have been the most enthusiastic about lowering their rates in response to this 8.5% target. So many urban areas have actually, they've pulled their rates down to the 8.5% target, and then they kept going.
Right. Dallas, you said 6.9%, right?
Right. Dallas is now at 6.9%, which is, you know, something like nearly a third of what we're seeing in these urban areas in other parts of the country. Again, Houston at 7.4%, and some of these other urban areas are very low as well. So that was very striking to us.
After your story ran, it seems that you received quite a bit of feedback from parents who had children with special needs and who had tried to get services. What did they tell you?
Yeah, we heard over and over again. I received at least 400 to 500 emails from parents, and they told us the exact story that we wrote about in our article about children being diagnosed with a disability and trying to get help from a school and being unable to do so. We heard that from hundreds of parents, and the line we heard the most was, we could not figure out why the schools were so reluctantly to help us until we read this article and we heard about this policy, and suddenly it all makes sense about why schools, you know, without explanation, not provide these services.
One of the things that was striking to me was the lengths to which school districts went to try to reduce their number. And you cite a school district in Henderson where the district took all of the evaluation request forms out of the schools and put them in a central office where teachers could only access them with permission from supervisors. What other types of impediments did you see where districts who were sort of eager to reduce their numbers put in place impediments either on parents or on teachers?
Yeah, so that example in Henderson ISD, which is actually a relatively small district in East Texas, is actually very illustrative of what we heard. So what you get from that story is teachers can still technically get the evaluation, but it's much harder for them to do so. And that's what we saw, a lot of variations on that type of a thing. In a nearby school district we heard about, they put in place a policy that said that before you could get one of those requests for a student to even be evaluated to see if they meet the criteria for special ed, you had to hold three separate meetings with colleagues to discuss other options.
That's pretty unusual, right?
Yeah, very unusual. And teachers are very busy people. And that certainly is the type of thing that is going to make teachers less likely to request evaluations. We also heard that teachers were being required to try out some different teaching techniques before they requested a special ed evaluation. And some districts even adopted policies that said that no student could be evaluated for special ed unless you tried out these techniques called response to intervention. That is a policy that has been specifically condemned or prohibited by the federal government. They have said you cannot do that, and yet many school districts in the state have done that. They've done things like establish district-wide committees to review requests for evaluation before there's approval to even evaluate the child. On the other hand, schools have also made it more difficult for parents to get evaluations. We heard repeatedly parents say that they had heard from schools that they would have to pay for the evaluation, or there would be a waiting list before they could get the evaluation, or that a student could only be evaluated once every 2 years, so you want to be careful about when you request your evaluation. None of which is true, but it's things that parents have been told in recent years as schools have been trying to lower their numbers.
As you just said, some of these things run directly counter to federal education policy. What is the U.S. Department of Education saying in response to your work?
The U.S. Department of Education has said that they are looking into this. They said that they have been in contact with Texas officials in the days since our story, and they're going to be deciding what to do in the days to come.
Now, I mean, people have their own stereotypes about Texas, but indeed, if you look at, you know, election results and the positions that candidates have taken, it's pretty clear that it's a predominantly conservative state, and that makeup is reflected in the state legislature. Some may, in fact, view this as a good news story, that they've reduced costs and reduced numbers. Is the legislature responding with applause or concern, or what are you hearing from them?
I think we haven't heard much from the legislature. Some Democrats have expressed outrage. We have not heard a lot from Republicans, who are obviously in power. And I think what they're doing is they're kind of grappling with the consequences of this. The kind of rough calculation that we did was, if Texas was at the national average in terms of the percentage of students it gave special ed services to, 250,000 more children would be receiving services.
Wow.
And that would cost, because it costs between $5,000 and $10,000 to educate a child in special education every year, that would cost something like $2 billion every year for the state. So, and most of that is paid by the state government. Some of it is paid by the federal government, and some is paid by local school districts as well. But I think the officials in power are kind of trying to figure out what exactly to do, because the stakes are very high. We're talking about tens of thousands of children, and we're talking about billions of dollars in a tight budget year after an oil downturn here in Texas. This kind of has dropped on them before the legislative session. So I think people are still kind of figuring out how to respond to this.
What made this story difficult, if it was, to report on? What were there any roadblocks that you had to overcome to tell the story?
Yes. The most difficult thing, I think, is the amount of time that has passed since this policy went into effect. It was put in place in 2004, and it was very difficult to try and figure out why it was put in place and the process by which it was put in place. There are virtually no records that the state has or that individual school districts have from that time. And in terms of quantifying the impact, there are many questions I would love to have answered with data about exactly how many evaluations were conducted and how those were affected. And we've had to rely on kind of a mismatch of data, because some school districts have data going back that far and others do not. So that was an issue. Similarly, people simply don't remember 12 years ago, and so that was an issue as well. I would say that was the biggest hurdle that we encountered, just trying to go back in time.
Well, I just say to listeners out there, this is a really, really phenomenal story, and one that has huge impact not only in the state of Texas, but is important nationally as well. So I would really encourage folks to read it. You can find links on our website and certainly on the Houston Chronicle's website. Brian Rosenthal, thank you for joining the ProPublica podcast, and we'll look forward to reading your follow-up stories.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the ProPublica podcast. We'll see you next time.